You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where, of course, we talk about the Indiana Pacers as always. My name is Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News, and today we're going to be diving into a rumor that's been circulating amongst the NBA media circles. If you'll recall, Ian Begley of the New York Post first reported about the Pacers' rumored interest in Gordon Hayward of the Celtics. Zach Lowe on his podcast, The Lowe Post, talked about this as well. So I figured, let's dive into this whole situation, right? The Pacers' interest in Hayward, why the Celtics would do this, how the machinations could work, what would the Celtics want from the Pacers? There's a lot of layers to this. So John Corrales, the host of Locked On Celtics, joined me, and we talked for almost 40 minutes about Hayward and why his trade value is what it is and what the Celtics would want and what the Pacers would want and how this would all fit together, and landed on a resolution that was very interesting to me. So you guys just enjoy this super interesting conversation about a Hayward trade to the Pacers and how it could or could not happen.
All right, Tony, let's figure this out, all right? Gordon Hayward to Indy, potentially, and do you want Gordon Hayward?
He would be maybe the best player on the team, probably the second best, definitely the second best player on the team. Chance to be the best player on the team if he can recapture some old form or even look like the guy he was for parts of last season. So yes, he would definitely make the Pacers better. And assuming this works out the way I think it will, it would also solve the Pacers' biggest roster construction problem of having two very good starters at the same position. So yes, I think despite the very large salary challenges of getting this done, just faced with the question you asked me, yes, Gordon Hayward would be good on the Pacers.
Okay. Now, how much of this is getting the Indiana kid back?
Well, that's what I was planning this in my head before we started recording, because I thought at some point we'd get to like this all started when Ian Begley wrote this article in the New York Post about, you know, the Pacers keeping their eye on Gordon Hayward or whatever he said. And I was going to say, no, John, this actually started in the mid-2000s when Gordon Hayward played for Brownsburg High School and was a stud, and then played at Butler and was a stud and almost won them a national championship game, right? So obviously the local appeal is good for ticket sales normally. However, that is probably not a factor next year. So that answer kind of depends on, well, I personally love when Indy players play for Indy, but I think that answer kind of depends on, you know, if he opts out and then does a sign and trade versus if he opts in, or, you know, I don't know how much that really factors into the equation beyond that he's just a really good player.
Yeah. You know, I think Indy sure as hell makes sense. I mean, he just bought like this huge mansion there earlier this year. Obviously he's from there. So him buying a big, huge house there makes sense. It's not like he bought it in, you know, Detroit or Houston or something, and people go, oh, hey, whoa. I don't know why anybody would buy it in Detroit. It's just a city that popped into my head. But I
hear you thinking loud and clearly about a Blake Griffin to the Celtics trade. That's exactly
God, not that again. Not that again. somebody asked me a question about a Blake Griffin trade, and I was like, nah, probably shouldn't get for Blake Griffin. And then people who don't read the story say, oh, why is he talking about trading for Blake Griffin? So
it's always that way, isn't it?
That's how it goes. But no. So when you look around the league, the obvious thing that makes the most sense for Gordon Hayward is to want to go home. And if he's leaving the team where he played for his college coach, then where else in the league would he want to go? I mean, he could try for one of the warmer weather teams, but he just seems like a guy that likes being home. He always likes being back in Indy. So it would make sense for him to want to go to Indy. Now, let me ask you this. I'm kind of perusing some of the salary situation here. It does not appear that at this point Indy can just sign him outright next season. But
no, they won't have, like, assuming the reporting from Shams that came out today, about, you know, how they're planning out the escrow and stuff works out. It sounds like the cap won't change that much over the next couple of years, right? And
yeah,
if that's the case, they won't have room for him, like, at all until basically, you know, a few years from now, like 2022 maybe. So yeah, the only way they could get him is via a trade, and specifically on a deal that is more than just a year. It had to be a sign and trade. So that they the Celtics have the leverage there, in that there is literally no other way the Pacers could get him other than a deal.
So, okay. So the options for getting him, and this is where the news here of the escrow situation, because if they smooth out the escrow and instead of 40% this upcoming season, it's 25%, and they do 20 and 18, whatever the number is, then whatever his contract is moving forward is going to be, he's going to have some taken out. Some of the thought around here in Boston was, if it's 1 year of 40% escrow, then you might as well opt out, sign a long-term deal, and stay in Boston, because that first year is going to get eaten up, and take 40% of less money is going to be less painful, because years 2, 3, and 4, assuming it's not a 5-year deal, you can make up some of what you lost in that escrow. But by smoothing it out, it feels like there might not be as much incentive for him to opt out and re-sign. So that leaves two options for the Pacers. The one you mentioned, where he opts out, tells Danny Ainge, trade me to Indy. That's where I want to go, and I'm going to opt out only for a trade there. Or he just decides to opt in, and Danny Ainge says, we're not dealing with $34 million, even though it's not really $34 million. That number is going to be what they use for the books. We can't deal with that, so we are going to trade you. So where would you like to go? Oh, you want to go to Indy? Let's talk to Indy. So,
but the thing is that they are different, because his salary number will be different and all that, right? But they all require so much cooperation from both Hayward, the Celtics, Ainge, the Pacers, that to me, the only objective difference in those is the salary return the Celtics get.
Right.
Obviously, Hayward's return, if his money structure, like you laid out via the escrow news, is different. But, you know, the way that it shakes out is like, If they go in before he even makes a decision on his opting, and he says, I want to get to Indiana somehow, I think the Celtics would almost prefer that he doesn't opt out and sign and trade, so that they can, you know, not have to take back some of the lesser stuff. But we can get to that more specifically. But yeah, I think what you're saying is those are the two paths that are possible, and because they're different, we have to talk about both.
Yeah. So, I mean, so your preference would be to have Hayward, you back channel it through his agent, and you say, Hayward's going to opt out and demand a trade, and it's going to be a sign and trade deal, a long-term deal for the Indiana Pacers. And maybe it's because they want 8% raises, or maybe you can't do 8% raises in a sign and trade.
You cannot.
You cannot. You got to do 5% raises. So then that eliminates that. Whatever reason they want it to be, they just want to do the sign and trade. There are ways to handcuff Danny Ainge a little bit. So a sign and trade would presumably start that first year somewhere in that. You're doing it because you want to lower that first year number and spread it out. So that would bring it down to like somewhere in the $20 million, $25 million range, I would assume. Is that kind of like the number in that first year you're thinking of?
Yeah, like 23 in my head, right? Because Sabonis is underpaid after his All-Star, but like I said, he'd be the best or second best player on the Pacers. And Brogdon, for example, makes just over 20. So you got to think he's better than Brogdon. He would get a few more million than that. He's 30 and has some injury history. So understood being, you know, a little scared of going to the high 20s, or, you know, obviously making 34 next year if he opts in. Fearful number. But yeah, the mid-20s range makes a lot of sense to me.
Okay. Are you afraid at all about Hayward's injuries?
I don't know how I can't be, right? I mean, like this year he was really good, right?
He was good.
Whatever his points, rebounds, assists, total averages. I think only a couple other guys in the league matched them. Like he was clearly really good this past year, but A, he got hurt again in the bubble, and B, he again gets older. So even if his injury history with Utah was pretty good, right? He barely ever, I don't think he missed more than 10 games with Utah ever. With Boston, it's been so not good that it makes you think, okay, as he gets older, I can't ignore that it's been so bad recently, even if it was so good for so long, because he's on the wrong side of 30 now.
Well, this is where I get, and why I ask the question, is because there's this concept of, well, Gordon Hayward's injury prone, which I do not think is true. I think Gordon Hayward has had bad injury luck in Boston, but the big injury, the one that would be problematic, is the one that he suffered, obviously, where he broke and dislocated his ankle. And that still has a little bit of nerve damage that caused him pain. So that is certainly lingering. But it's nerve and pain, and it's not going to hamper him unless the pain gets so bad that he has to, whatever, miss games. But I think they figured out how to manage that. The other big injury he had this year during the regular season is that he broke his hand in a weird pick that he got caught up in with LaMarcus Aldridge, and then he landed on somebody's foot. So I look at those three things and I think that's none of that is his fault. All right. Of it is just really crappy luck.
Hey guys, quick break from the Hayward talk to tell you guys to try out Built Bar, because Built Bar is making the best tasting protein bar ever. What they have is a delicious and super healthy protein bar that is 100% covered in chocolate and soft and easy to chew. And why is that important? Because they have 18 awesome flavors, and the consistency of the bar matches the flavor, right? So the coconut almond one is crunchier, the peanut butter one is smoother, the mint brownie one is smoother. They're really delicious, and they're great for the health conscious guy. They're a great way to maintain or lose weight while indulging in something delicious. They're low calorie, low sugar, but high protein and high fiber, so they're great for like a keto diet, for example. The cherry barska flavor, 17 grams of protein, 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 grams net carbs. Super healthy, super delicious. You got to try them out. Go to builtbar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, all one word. You'll get 20% off your next order. Use that promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at builtbar.com.
So I do agree with you that his injuries have been because of bad luck, but they've still happened, right? And they probably impact how good he can be going forward because he's had to recover from those things, right?
Sure, but I mean, one is an ankle sprain, a bad ankle sprain, but you recover from ankle sprains, and it wasn't the ankle that he hurt. And the broken bone was a broken bone. I mean, it was just that healed, it was fine. The only one that really would be concerning, if I'm looking at it from the other side, and even from the Celtics' perspective, is that nerve thing that was in his foot, the right foot or left foot that he injured. And him saying, look, it's a nerve thing. It's certainly tied to the original injury. Sometimes it's just going to hurt and I have to deal with it. That is something that, well, like I said, would be lingering. But again, it's not an injury per se. It's just something that's painful and that would impact how well he can play. So that is certainly a concern. But I tend to push back on the Gordon Hayward is injury prone, because personally, my preferable, my desired outcome would be opt out, resign long term, stay with Boston, because he's a really good player and you need good players if you're going to win a championship. So, all right.
Yeah, I think that's why I think that this is hard, is because that's the preferential route for the Celtics. No matter, like, he was so good last year that to me, the only way he becomes a Pacer is if he literally says, like, trade me to the Pacers, which is why this all is like the Celtics have to want something the Pacers have a lot too, and we haven't even gotten to that. And you know, it's a really hard machination to make up, and his value is kind of hard to pinpoint because we don't know how he's going to handle the situation. That makes this so fascinating to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's and this is why there are a lot of different roads, and Gordon Hayward's desires here, who knows what they are. And this could be a leverage play. This could be something that he tells to Danny, because this is his last big contract. He's 30. He's gonna get potentially a 3 to 4 year deal. It's gonna be out there. I think the Pacers are willing to pay him 4 years and somewhere around 90 to 100 million, somewhere in that range. I mean, that makes sense, right? After like 4 years, 100 million, is that on the high end of what you'd be willing to pay him as a, you know, running the Pacers?
Yeah, I mean, that, like the Pacers can't get that level of player signing almost ever, right? Like
right.
It's the perfect situation of a small market team where a guy grew up and he's apparently enthusiastic about. So that they can't skip that opportunity, but in a league with so much financial uncertainty and the Pacers already being tied up to their current roster, it is risky to go, you know, give another player 20x whatever million a year. Now they'd have to send out money to do it, so it's not so risky, but it's obviously a little risky.
Sure, sure. Okay. So there are those scenarios that Gordon Hayward says, okay, I'm done in Boston. Thank you. I want to go home. And then Danny Ainge kind of is like, all right, well, we'll try to work something out. But if he opts in, I don't think Hayward gets traded when he opts out. Like I said, unless he specifically asks for it, I think he can just decide to opt in and then he's at Danny Ainge's whim. And I think there is a possibility that he gets traded, because now from a Boston perspective, I'm sitting there as Danny Ainge thinking like, all right, this guy is going to put us over the tax, and wherever that salary line falls, that, you know, it's not necessarily about paying the tax. The Celtics are willing to pay the tax, but there is a repeater tax down the road, and we know that that basically doubles your tax payment, and I don't know how willing the Celtics are to pay that. Nobody's going to be willing to pay that just to pay it. So the longer you can push it off, if you can, and still make good decisions about your roster, then fine. And there is value to trading Gordon Hayward. You can say that he's another wing that requires touches, and even if he is looking to be unselfish and set up other players, it's time that the ball is not in Jason Tatum's hands, is not in Jaylen Brown's hands. And maybe taking the ball out of Hayward's hands and putting it into those guys' hands more allows them to grow to a point that makes up for a lot of what you lose with Gordon Hayward. And that's just much more valuable, because then you add these other players that can add more and you come out ahead. It's a net positive for the Celtics. So there's that theory out there for sure. So if the Celtics are going to trade Gordon Hayward and flip him into two useful players, because it's probably going to be a 2-for-1, then, you
almost,
know,
almost certainly. Yeah.
Yeah. So then you know, scan the league. I'm not sure what the landscape is for a Gordon Hayward trade out there. I don't know how many teams are clamoring for a Gordon Hayward, but now I'm looking at this Pacers roster and thinking, okay, what can the Celtics get? What is Indiana willing to give up in order to get Gordon Hayward?
Well, before we do that, let me flip this question on you. How much better, if at all, do you think Miles Turner is than Daniel Tice?
I think Miles Turner is better.
Good start.
Okay.
not
as much better as the $18 million Miles Turner salary versus the $5 million Tice salary would indicate, that it's closer than that. So I think Turner is a better player, but Tice is more valuable.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I've always won. So I touted Tice all season because a lot of Pacers fans wanted to play the Celtics in the playoffs because they thought they could just pick on Tice, which was funny to me, but it's like they didn't watch him dominate the playoffs this year. Anywho, that gap is not as big as fans think, right? So every time any Hayward Pacers trade gets brought up in the Pacers aura, you know, whatever, the internet, the team, media, Miles Turner's name is the first one that's thrown in, mostly because he is duplicative with Sabonis, right? They're both centers. The thought is that moving him for a forward, even beyond just whatever the talent difference is between the player they get and him, if the fit is just going to be so much better that the team is almost better no matter what. So the thought from the Pacers is, in any deal like this, even if it's not for Gordon Hayward, if it's for whoever, Buddy Hield, Drew Holiday, whatever, Miles is going to be in it because it will make their roster construction make way more sense and all these pieces will fit better. So the way it would have to work is if the Celtics don't want Turner, it's probably a lot harder to get this done because I know Depot's name is going to come up, but you know, Depot's value is hard to pinpoint. Brogdon's not going to be moved. Domas isn't going to be moved. And then all of a sudden you're kind of at options. So Turner seems like very, very, very likely to be the biggest salary ballast in any Hayward move.
Well,
uh-oh.
That's the episode. Thanks, everybody. No, it's...
Okay, so let's talk Depot because that's the other thing you want to talk about.
Well,
right?
Yeah, gonna... so... I'm not
so Turner sure. It's not going to get you there, right? Like, sorry, I'm going to finish up the Turner thought and then we'll get to Depot.
No, go ahead, because Turner plus, I don't know, who else are you going
to
throw in there? Is it Turner
and
Doug McDermott?
To get to is, because we talked about the two paths. So if he opts in and then gets traded at $34 million, it has to be Turner plus two of Warren, Lamb, McDermott, and they're not trading TJ Warren and Miles Turner for Gordon Hayward. That's just not happening.
Right.
So all of a sudden it's Turner, Lamb, McDermott, and you're probably the Celtics are sucking down Jeremy Lamb's money. Like, that's bad money. So then you have to throw in another asset. You know, that gets muddy. And if he does the other option we talked about, which is opt out and then re-sign a long-term deal and get signed and traded, you still probably at the number we said, about $24 million, 22. I guess at 22 it's close where it's just Turner plus assets straight up, but if it gets to 24, 25-ish, all of a sudden you got to include Doug McDermott. And he's probably appealing to the Celtics. He's a really good shooter and he's expiring, but it's still extra stuff, right? So it have to any trade involving Turner would have to be Turner plus stuff, whereas in that second option where he opts out and signs a longer deal, it could be just Depot. But that is what I wanted to finish the Turner stuff with is there would have to be other things, and it would almost certainly be McDermott and probably Lamb if he opts in.
So from a Boston perspective – it has to be whomever you're putting in there and somebody. So, and that includes to me, Victor Oladipo, because I'm not sure that what Victor Oladipo is. And we could talk about that now because what's Victor Oladipo going to be? Because now I am very concerned about his injury history. Now that's an
yes,
injury history.
Should be.
That's, you know, that's not just bad luck. That's like soft tissue stuff. And yep. That's really concerning to me.
And the soft tissue stuff happened because he came back too early from a different injury on the same knee, right? Which
right.
is even worse.
Right.
That's chronic all of a sudden.
So now all of a sudden that same knee has gone through rehabs twice. And that compromises the structure of the knee. That compromises the long-term health. And just as much as I... you know, have enjoyed watching Victor Oladipo in games not played against the Celtics. I don't know what that return is going to be. Now, is there a way to say, all right, we'll do 1 year of Oladipo and either turn around and flip him by the deadline. That's a possibility. You take him on, you let him show that he's healthy, and you turn around and you use him as a trade asset. That's something that Danny Ainge can certainly do. That just puts the emphasis on who's that second player. Is there a second player that the Celtics can get for Gordon Hayward that in my earlier scenario, the ball being out of Gordon Hayward's hands, there's no more Gordon Hayward. So Jason Tatum makes up for some of the difference because he's getting the ball and his usage rate goes up. Jaylen Brown's usage rate goes up and we're assuming that good things happen because of that. Now we need a solid guy off the bench to give the Celtics some scoring, some other things that the net effect of all of this is you've gotten basically Gordon Hayward's production. This. Who is that guy?
It's going to be Aaron Holiday, right? Is that what you're about to say?
That seems to be one of the guys that fits the...
I was going to say, when you started that, I was like, oh, he's going to say TJ McConnell. Great, we're done here. and then I thought, oh, right, he's still about to say Aaron Holiday. Yeah, Aaron's a tricky case because he's the best... embarrassingly, he's like the best prospect on the Pacers now. I mean, Turner and Sabonis were young. I put air quotes up. They're mid-20s. But of all their drafts since 2016, when they traded away the pick that became Caris LeVert, they picked TJ Leaf, Edmund Sumner, Aaron Holiday, Goga Batadze, and Alzay Johnson, right? terrible right now, terrible youth pipeline. And Aaron Holiday's not even that young. He was a senior when he got picked. So they kind of, like, I get why they would be willing to include him in a deal, especially if he gets someone good like Gordon Hayward. But they probably value him more than he is actually worth. You know what I mean? Just because of the situation where they need a good player on their rookie deal to be good and in the rotation for a while. Not that, you know, again, they'd be willing to part with him if the deal's right. It's just his value to the Pacers is higher than his value to other teams. Both that's the case for every player on their own team, right? But, you know, especially so in this scenario. So that would be a tough part for the Pacers. But I understand why the Celtics would want to do that, especially because he's good already.
Yes. Although he's a little small. And
yeah, shorter than me.
You know, so.
You've seen him walking through the hallways. Yeah, he's short.
Yeah. And so I'm not a big fan of another small guard, though he can shoot, but you're not. We've already got Kemba Walker in Boston, and I know Danny Ainge has this affinity for short point guards, but I mean, this is getting a little out of control. But Aaron Holiday certainly does fit the bill. I mean, he can shoot the hell out of the ball, and that's primarily what the Celtics need coming off of the bench. So now, this is how trade talks go. Is there the possibility, is there anybody else on the Celtics that might interest you?
Ooh.
Not Romeo
Ooh.
Langford.
Damn it. Just make this the full Indiana enchilada. Right?
Although, okay.
Throwing Carson Edwards lawyer at it, we're done. We got
yeah.
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Deal. But you could get Carson Edwards back. Boston will give up Carson Edwards.
I did see Miles Turner was at, was trained. Did you see who Miles Turner was training with yesterday by chance?
No, I didn't.
Miles Turner was in the gym with Anfernee Simons, not yeah. Celtic, but still. Taco Fall and Grant Williams.
Oh, okay. Oh, interesting. I saw Taco and Grant together on some video, but I'm on vacation from my full-time job. So okay. I've spent a lot of time not on the internet.
The internet.
So okay, I've actually been sitting here on Twitter going like, what the hell am I doing? Get outside. Go do something.
Sorry, I'm taking away from your vacation.
No, I'm still podcasting, so I haven't gone anywhere. I mean, I can't go anywhere. I'm stuck. They just put a curfew in Massachusetts, so I'm very stuck. So
I'm going to walk you through what I just did in my head, if that's okay.
Okay.
So I pull up the Celtics roster.
Yes.
That's how this goes. And I go, okay, there's Gordon Hayward. Check. Okay, Marcus Smart. That's too much. Then we're just done. Trade talks are over the second. The Pacers say Marcus Smart. We're done. Then I keep going. Brad Wanamaker, not that interesting. Just keep Aaron. I mean, Aaron's better and way younger. And I know that we just talked about Aaron being in the deal, but still no interest there. Enes Kanter is bad. So then, you know, we're at Grant and Time Lord and Romeo. And that's kind of it in terms of stuff that has value that could go to the Pacers. And they already have Goga and Sabonis. So Time Lord's value isn't a ton there. So it'd have to be one of Romeo and Grant. And I don't know if the Celtics would be able to part with either of those to do Depot and Aaron Holiday, right?
Yeah. So are you saying that Depot and Holiday for Gordon Hayward, that's just too much?
Probably. That's hard because Hayward's the best player in that deal for sure right now. That might be really close. And maybe I'm just overvaluing Aaron Holiday here. But to me, the Pacers know they're probably going to look stupid on any Depot trade they make. They probably just wouldn't do something like that. I can't explain it. Like, I feel like they're going to try to, if they do trade Depot, they'll wait till the deadline anyway. So they'd have to know they're getting really good value to do it right now. And I don't know that Gordon Hayward basically straight up is that value.
Right. Yeah. I don't know that. I mean, you could say Gordon Hayward for Oladipo straight up, and some people would be happy about that. If Oladipo is healthy and we can somehow be assured that he's healthy, I mean maybe that is enough. I do hold Gordon Hayward in very high regard. So some people would sit there and just be like, why are you negotiating Hayward for Depot? Boom, done. Like, throw some ballast in there and you're fine.
Yeah.
But I happen to think, first of all, I was very excited about Gordon Hayward coming to Boston. I I thought that he was on a very high upward trajectory. That injury really derailed what I thought could have been a Hall of Fame career. That's how much I was into Gordon Hayward. I thought a Western Conference All-Star approaching the height of his powers, at the height of his powers, going to the East was going to make a ton more All-Star games and was for sure going to be on a path where people go, is he a Hall of Famer? He might be. So that's all obviously been derailed, but I still think he has all those skills. So he's lost right. some of his athleticism, but even in the bubble, like during the seeding games, he had some bounce. He was bouncy in the bubble. I was like, wow. So that's why my preference is Hayward opt out, sign him 4 years, whatever, 90, 100 million, deal with that. He's still, I don't buy into the stuff I was saying before, but there I'm sure some people do. So I value him highly going out. So I may be undervaluing Victor Oladipo, but his injuries, I think, more chronic than what I think.
You're right about that. So how about we both present our final offers? And we haven't even gotten to the fact, by the way, that the Celtics have 3 first-round picks that could be navigated into this.
Well, yeah, I think they would certainly. I mean, if we're doing this in the offseason, I don't know. Hayward and the 20, I don't know if 26 moves the needle. But, I mean, at the 14th
pick. The Celtics don't even need those late first, right? Their rosters is loaded up, basically.
Right. So The Celtics right now with their draft picks, they're trying to package them to move up. That's not going to get the deal done. I think they could package 14 and 26 and a player to move into like 8. You know, that's possible. In which case, if the Celtics were able to do that, then they would have the 30th pick left over and a second rounder. And you could say Gordon Hayward, the 30th pick, a second rounder. And, you know, is that enough to move the needle in this draft? You can get maybe some value out of that cheap talent at 30. And then you'd get, I know that Indiana wants to move Turner.
Yes. I was going to say, if I'm the Pacers, I'd be hesitant to do Depot on this deal. And my final offer would probably be Turner, McDermott, Lamb, and whatever assets are required to make it just those 3 players. Right. I guess Aaron, if he has to be that asset, I'll put Aaron in 2, and then whatever additional stuff makes it happen, because including Depot, it's just hard because like the point of getting a guy like Hayward is like, all right, if Depot's good, like, damn, the Pacers could be awesome next year. You know what I mean? And if he's not, they'll move him at the deadline. That's kind of been the thought anyway. So I am probably drawing my line in the sand after the 3 guys plus stuff that I just named. And okay. I probably am thinking that you, Celtics representative here, are just out if that's the case.
I would say that Turner, you're saying Turner, Lamb, and McDermott.
Yes.
And I'm saying
assets required because Lamb is just useless for the Celtics and is coming off a big injury.
Right. So I don't see why the Celtics would have to take back bad money when you're giving up.
Just to make the salaries match. If they don't need to do that, take him out and just do McDermott and Turner. That's at the $34 million then Lamb's in.
I think if you're going to get Turner, I think if the Celtics are going to get Turner, that means they're out on Robert Williams. They just don't believe that he's going to develop into anything. Or they're out on Daniel Tice, which they're not. I don't know if they want to go 3 bigs and with Turner and Tice and Robert Williams. But Daniel Tice off the books next year. I'm not excited about paying a center $18 million in today's NBA. I think that's kind of where I land on this. Especially Miles Turner, who's good, but that's still a lot of money for a center when you can spend your money better, I think, elsewhere.
That is very fair.
So that's why I focus on Oladipo. More so, I think Oladipo and a player for Hayward and, you know, Hayward and a pick, I think Oladipo and McDermott at 28.3 million. How highly do you value McDermott, honestly? I mean, he shoot the hell out of the ball, but
He was great last year. Yeah. I good answer. Good question. So
he's 28.
Our lovely overlord David Locke in the Locked On mock draft last year offered the Jazz first round pick for him because the Jazz needed shooting, and he is a hell of a sniper and has never been on a team that's just said, Doug, shoot 6 threes in a game.
Yeah. I like the fact that he's, you know, a stretch big, like he's a 6'7".
He's money.
Yeah.
So I value him a decent amount because I think the new coach Bjorkren's going to use him properly. Finally.
Yeah.
McMillan kind of figured it out last year, but understanding that he is a decently valuable trade piece for the exact same reasons that other teams would go, oh, holy shit, this dude can drill him.
I think if you did Depot and McDermott for Hayward and, you know, throw in maybe the 14th pick, depending on what they decide to do, I think that could work because basically I'm looking at the Celtics keeping McDermott long term, and either Oladipo proves that he's healthy and he becomes a player, or Oladipo proves that he's healthy and he becomes a valuable trade asset, and the Celtics turn around and fill out their bench using Oladipo. That would be where I want to go with that. Hayward, okay. A pick for Oladipo and McDermott.
Wow. It's hard. Like, I did this with Drew trades too, and it's just, the other team's always going to want Depot, and the Pacers are always going to want to give Turner. And because they're both kind of in limbo with these talks, it's really hard to find the right deal.
You know what you do? And this thought just popped into my head, so I don't know how you would structure this.
Okay.
You get Charlotte involved and see if they want to take Turner and... Yeah, I'm looking at Charlotte's. I don't know what they do, but you get another team involved that's looking for a big, and Charlotte's the one that just pops up. I know they're looking for a big, and you see, okay, if the Celtics can get for Hayward two useful players, and you do McDermott in that deal, and I don't know who on. I don't know if Devontae Graham's going to be the guy. And they probably want to keep him. I haven't thought about this very much, but if there's another team that's looking for a big that has a useful bench shooter, that Turner can go there, their bench shooter can go to Boston, McDermott goes to Boston, and you get Hayward, that could be the structure of a deal. But I think
that makes sense to me.
I think, honestly, the one thing that we're coming out of this podcast with is it's tough to accomplish what Indy wants and what Boston wants in a one-on-one deal.
It is.
You have to probably get a third team involved.
Not only is it tough with just those two teams, but it requires so much cooperation from everyone.
Yeah.
That it's hard for me not to think we're missing something asset-wise, right? Like the Pacers have to, because they can't get, right? What we said, they can't get him. Unless it's this deal. So Danny Ainge can just go, you throw an Aaron Holiday, or sorry, we're just, you know, you can't have him. Right. It's that easy.
Right.
So that's probably what I'm missing, is that I shouldn't be so stubborn. Yeah. That's how it would end.
Right. Right. Because, I mean, the thought is that Gordon Hayward is not only your best or second best player, that Gordon Hayward is the indie guy going home. And when fans get to come back into the seats, he is really a draw. Not that you need the draw in Indy. I've been there. It's always pretty full. Basketball is a fairly popular sport, I'd say, in Indiana. So I think that they would fill it no matter what. But Hayward being there as the Indy kid coming home has a little something extra to it. So I think that's something that the fans would enjoy. But yeah, I think ultimately, and having not surveyed the league strongly enough to know what that third team might be, it's going to be hard for me to figure out what that third team is. But I think that's where we are. If the Celtics and Pacers are going to do a deal for Gordon Hayward, it might really need a third team.
Wow, I'm getting a call from the Sacramento Kings. That's so weird.
Interesting.
That's so interesting. we're not going to go in too long on these three-team deals, but I agree that we've gone through all the information and arrived at the same thesis, that it probably would have to be a three-team trade.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Some interesting choices on the Sacramento Kings.
I agree. There's one. There's a bench shooter that's the kind of player you named that I immediately thought.
That would be okay. We got to cut it off because we're going long. We got to cut it off. But
sorry, I should have said that earlier.
You should have. I did the second because the Sacramento Kings are never on my mind. They weren't on my mind at this point. So
that's totally fair. Yeah. But the Hornets are apparently.
The Hornets are because you know the Celtics have done deals with the Hornets. So
fair enough.
And no, I do not want Terry Rozier back. So
oh boy.
All right. Well, this was good. I think for the basic exercise for fans of each side, I think it's important for Celtics fans to know what Indy wants to do, who they value, and how I think for Indy fans, how the Celtics value Gordon Hayward and what they're looking to accomplish. So I still think we got to where we needed to be, even though we didn't really come to an actual deal.
I agree. You didn't say anything I didn't expect, which is good. I think that means my pulse on how this would have to go is pretty good.
Cool.
This isn't about me, but I am personally happy.